Machine for October 17th, 2024. I'm your mad scientist host, Wally. With me live on air is my fellow mad scientist, Dr. Shelby Ellison. She is a researcher in plant genetics and an assistant professor in the Department of Plant and Agroecosystem Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She represents the UW Cannabis Lab and is digging into hemp for our farmers here in the state. So welcome to the Perpetual Motion Machine, Shelby.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Awesome. So the great state of Wisconsin, I heard a story from you. You're talking about why you chose to study hemp and cannabis from a gap. So like what are you doing here? What are we talking about?
Yeah. So there's about, let's say, over 120 years of history that I'm going to summarize for why I'm working in hemp, why we're talking about hemp right now, why it's interesting to other people, hopefully. So historically, in the state of Wisconsin, we were a large producer of hemp. So we started growing hemp around the turn of the 20th century in Wisconsin. I think the first farm was planted in 1908. And hemp grew very well in the state, and we actually started gaining momentum and competing with some of the other big states, such as Kentucky, because some of the really core processing for hemp to break the hemp into its core fibers, the long bast fibers, was invented. There were two important patents between Illinois and Wisconsin. So we started growing a lot of hemp, and then hemp became very complicated, intertwined with a lot of legality issues because of its association with drug-type cannabis. And so production dipped. But then back in World War II, we needed more hemp because it was a really good domestic fiber source. So the U.S. government encouraged us to grow it again, and Wisconsin led the charge and grew the most acreage of hemp for fiber production in the entire country.
Cool.
So with that, I talked to a lot of people. So then after World War II, when we no longer needed that fiber source, there was high taxation on growing hemp again, and production really halted. And then it was very intertwined with illegality of drug-type cannabis. And so then flash forward to 2014, 2018, we get these new farm bills where we're able to grow hemp again. And because of the history in the state of Wisconsin, because most of us who grew up in Wisconsin see ditchweed, which is feral cannabis from those early, from growing in the 1940s.
From the rope.
Yeah. There's this culture, like people were very excited to get back into hemp. And so lots of people are growing hemp, and that's why I was interested in it. And it's a fascinating plant, and there's so much research that needs to be done to catch it back up with all the other crops we use.
So I mean, the timber barons of old—they shut it down. It's kind of an interesting thing that the hemp itself was very quality, but it was just conflated with other complex things, and also just was not allowed to. It was outcompeted in a way because of the subsidies and whatnot. So we have this modern world, and we have the farm bill leading us into this next phase of hemp. It's a very uncertain time, of course. What do you think about, how can we promote the fact that it is something that people can use in a sustainable way in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so the one thing that I can say very confidently is that hemp grows very well here. So when I talk about hemp, what I'm talking about is the plant Cannabis sativa. So that's the genus and species of the plant. And then hemp is a legal term, as is defined in the 2014 and 2018 farm bills. And that is cannabis sativa with less than 0.3% THC. And how you read that can be a little murky, but essentially it's non-psychoactive. Like when we grow it in a field, if you were to harvest it, you should not experience psychoactive effects from it. Hemp is awesome. It's a really multifaceted crop because you can grow it for three different industries or purposes. You can grow it for the flowers, which is where we do extract other cannabinoids from. So mm-hmm. by now everybody's heard of CBD, but there's hundreds of these cannabinoids mm-hmm. that can be extracted from the flower. You can grow it for the fiber, which is the stalk or the stem of the plant. That is where the bast fibers that traditionally have been used for making ropes or different cordage or textiles. That is because hemp fibers...
Cool hoodies.
Yes. Cool hoodies. Those fibers are one of the longest, strongest fibers in the natural world. So hemp is very unique. Those bast mm-hmm. fibers are really special. And then the third product is actually hemp grain. Mm. So you can currently buy hulled hemp seeds. It is an exceptionally nutritional grain. It has a high fatty acid profile and protein content. So you can extract the oil and also make protein powder out of it. So it's a really multifaceted crop. You can do lots of stuff with it. So many different industries you can get into, and it grows well here. We just have this major bottleneck that we've gone through where there's limited research, limited industry, mm-hmm. and now we have to build this up in real time. So it's not like you can just grow the plant and make stuff out of it. You have to find the infrastructure to process the plant into these different goods.
Right. And plus it's regulated. So it's yes. this extra burden of being like, no, I'm going to make this hemp seed, and that's what I'm doing. And you'd be like, don't worry about it. But that's not how it always works, unfortunately. I've heard that hemp seed is one of the most perfect human foods. It replicates what we need.
Yeah, yeah.
There's on a very basic level.
There's a omega-3 to omega-6 fatty acid profile that's supposed to be in this 3-to-1 or 2-to-1 ratio, mm-hmm. and hemp seed fits that like very well.
And like protein and this overall kind of structure. Yeah, it's mm-hmm. it's amazing. So we'll see. You know, it's as part of like getting forward the Wisconsin idea of diversified crops and moving forward into the future. So we have a different rule than our neighbors as far as how they treat production of hemp. What is it about Wisconsin? So like we're working to find the right niche for our farmers and also having to compete with other ideas. So how does that interface right now with Wisconsin farmers?
Yeah. So the farm bills, you know, are being enacted at a federal level. So there is written language in the 2018 Farm Bill, which is sadly our last Farm Bill because we haven't had one for many, many years now.
Hopefully not forever. But
so that leads to the federal framework for how we are allowed to grow and research hemp in the country. However, the federal government originally had states make their own individual plans. So they had to follow some regulatory framework from the federal government, but they have subtle differences. Mm. Wisconsin originally had a state plan. So when that plan was passed in 2017, and then in 2018 was the first year we were able to grow hemp legally in the state. And we had that plan for a couple of years, but it was very expensive mm-hmm. for the State Department of Ag to do that. To implement that plan because of all these regulatory hurdles. So you needed someone to come to every field that grew hemp, take samples, take them to a lab, verify that they had less than 0.3% THC for that crop to be harvested. If it was non-compliant, it had to be destroyed.
Right.
So roughly 12% of all hemp that was grown in 2018, 2019 was destroyed because it was non-compliant. And so it was very expensive and there were no resources.
It was just like, it was Wild West. In my previous job, I spoke to that department and mm-hmm. got to be like, what are you guys doing out there? And they're like, because with shortages and timing, you have to hit the farms at the right time to even mm-hmm. get the right science. And it was just not really working.
Yeah, well. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's all happening in the month of September and you have like two people for the state to go test all of these
right.
fields.
They have a lot more now. They've expanded a lot.
So that's what also happened is that now Wisconsin is a U.S. federal program. So we no longer have a state program that regulates our hemp program. It's under the USDA or the U.S. government. Mm-hmm. And we're last year it was only one of five states that do this, but it actually has become easier from a research standpoint. And I think from most of the producers and growers mm-hmm. in the state, it's a cheaper program And there are people who can become certified hemp samplers. So they take a training and they can come collect samples. So I do think it's a little bit more streamlined. I will say, though, there is still discrepancy between the different states for how these rules are interpreted and implemented.
For sure.
And then it all becomes complicated with drug type cannabis because, you know, all we have in the state mm-hmm. is legal hemp, whereas all pretty much of our neighboring states and, you know, 39 other states in the nation have some sort of medicinal or recreational program. And there's, yeah, that just makes it very state by state how what can be done and what are the problems associated with being run, you know, competition between states that are maybe someone's 100 miles away from a state border and they have different policies and what are the implications of that?
Right. Especially when you're talking about destruction of your crop if you don't, you know, pass muster and what a weird state of affairs. But I'm glad we're thinking about it though. I think it's a cool thing. It's cool to hear that it grows well here as a industrial product in the state of Wisconsin. And I hope to kind of tease apart a bit more like how we can use that for our own personal structures and like what co-ops exist. But for a minute, we're going to take a little bit of a music break here. So this is the Perpetual Notion Machine, and we'll be back in like 3 minutes. Thanks. I listened to it today. I was like, yeah, I love Green Album. I'm a Blue Album guy, Green Album.
Yeah.
Going back and forth, man. It's really good. All right. Welcome back. You are listening to the Perpetual Notion Machine. This is your mad scientist, Wally. I'm in conversation with Dr. Shelby Ellison, fellow mad scientist. She's leading our state's research in hemp as an assistant professor in the Department of Plant and Agroecosystem Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And we're talking about why it's good for our state, what we're doing, how we're laying it out for our farmers, how it can be something that can be part of your cash crop as a fiber and as something that is an ancient source of material that is now on the rise. So what can you say about our, I guess, the fact that there's so many nutrients in there? We talked a little bit about what you're doing. So what's it like a day or a week or a month? And like, what are you in the life of a researcher doing this kind of work?
Yeah. So my position at UW is primarily a research position, but I also have a teaching appointment. And I also, working in a new crop like this, emerging crops or in a new old crop, I do a lot of outreach and extension work as well, because there's not really much reason to do research if no one's going to grow this or be able to grow it or do anything with it.
Right.
So, you know, I have a very active lab where we are really trying to apply research that has been done to crops like corn and soy and rice and even the very big vegetable crops. You know, there are lots of things known about what are breeding targets. So there are things called domestication traits in crops that are kind of this suite of traits that are the first things to be selected for that separate them from a wild plant. Some examples of domestication traits are traits related to dormancy. So whether a seed will germinate when you put it in the ground or if it needs to go through some sort of cold treatment. Seed shattering. You can imagine in the wild, a plant wants to shatter its seeds. Well, a domesticated plant, you don't want that. You want it to keep its seeds.
Grip on it.
And there's many, many things related to plant architecture and flowering time and just overall yield. So,
and nutrition too.
And nutrition, absolutely. So unfortunately, normally the first set of domestication traits are more about yield, and then the second set of domestication traits are more about improvement of traits. So, but we don't have to do that anymore. We can apply what we know in many other plants and start to make progress, both understanding the genetics. So my background is in genetics, understanding the genetics that control these traits with the ultimate goal of breeding new varieties that have these domestication traits and are improved. So whatever your end target is, if it's for fiber, if it is for grain, or if it is for cannabinoids, that you're getting, you know, the most out of that plant. But also we have a new, we think about agriculture more systematically now, where we think about the cropping system. I mean, this has always been the case, but we have tools now to study this better, which is, how does this crop fit into a rotation? Mm-hmm. What are the microbes in the soil and how are they benefiting the system? What, you know, what resources do we want to put in? Hemp is really interesting. There's not as many labeled chemicals like herbicides and pesticides in hemp because it takes a long time to get labels for those products.
Sure.
And it hasn't been around long.
Mm-hmm.
So we're having to come up with really novel systems for dealing with weeds and pests in the absence of chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to think about all of the things that go into, like, you know, plant density and how to prep a seed bed and how to make hemp more competitive. So breeding things below ground, breeding root traits that make it more competitive.
Sure.
So my lab does a lot of that underlying genetics and also exploring different cropping systems. We have a collaboration with folks across the Midwest where we work both with farmers and different universities to grow many different available hemp cultivars to see which ones perform the best in our region. We collect all the yield data, all the quality data, and then we have something called the Midwestern Hemp Database, where we make all of that publicly available. Ooh. So anybody who's interested in growing hemp for whatever reason can go look at that data, look at the yield data we get every location, every year, and start making informed decisions. But also, probably most importantly for hemp, we also test the cannabinoid content mm-hmm. to see how much CBD or THC right. it has.
Keep it in the level, huh?
So they know this particular variety might yield really high, but it really walks the line of that 0.3% threshold. But what I will say I'm even more excited about than that, because that number, that 0.3%, it rubs a lot of us the wrong way. Because
it's arbitrary.
It is quite arbitrary. And what we're trying to do is to generate a huge body of data that is non-biased. We're just growing these plants to show what a more appropriate threshold might be.
Sure.
It might be 0.5% THC, and that would include 90% more
That's
cultivars.
That's not much of a change.
Yeah.
And especially since the loopholes and the whole thing about the Farm Bill are already being used in different ways.
So
especially if you're trying to do this for food or for fiber production, it's a whole different ball of wax.
And the funniest thing is, when you grow for fiber production, you are normally going to harvest that plant at the beginning of flowering before it even is producing cannabinoids.
Sure.
If you're growing it, you're still supposed to test the flower for cannabinoids, even though that's not how you would do it in a practical standpoint. So there's so many incongruencies between the rules and what is practical and makes sense. And, you know, if you can go to a dispensary and buy drug type cannabis that has 35% THC, like something that is 0.45% THC it should not be regulated the same way.
And does not look the same. It's not the same kind.
Yeah.
It's a wide spectrum of plants, huh?
Absolutely. And another thing that you said, so, you know, that's one of the most exciting things that I'm working on too, is this is a new research area. When a lot of university breeders, or breeders in general, when they start, they might inherit some breeding populations or seeds from their predecessor that they start working with. Well, you can imagine that did not exist when I started my breeding program.
Not officially.
And there was no U.S. seed bank for cannabis, because that was also destroyed in 1970.
Wild.
So one of the things that I thought of is, okay, we grew all this hemp in 1940 through 1945. A lot of that hemp, as it was being carted by rail from location to location or through bird dispersal, escaped into the wild. Mm-hmm. And that is what became feralized cannabis. Mm-hmm. So that's cultivated.
AKA ditchweed.
AKA ditchweed. I don't write ditchweed in my papers, but yes. Feralized cannabis. And that is everywhere. And it is all over the Midwest. So what you have is this, it was fiber hemp that escaped from production into the wild, has been adapting to our location for the last, you know, 70 plus years, and it's all over. So I have been working. This is a really fun project. It's a collaborative citizen scientist project. So there's apps where people go and report biodiversity that they have observed. So you can go to this app called iNaturalist, and people will say, I observe cannabis at this location. And there's like 1,800 records of this across the Midwest.
Wow.
So we've gone and we've collected from a bunch of those populations, and we just took all that seed. We tested in my lab to figure out if it has high CBD or high THC.
That's where it comes from.
And then,
cool.
And then we just distribute that to the new USDA hemp seed bank. So it is now a resource people can use for research.
That is amazing. That's, you know, the old is new again. And I think we've moved past stuff in modern society that we should move back to, for just, you know, apples and hemp and just good mineral water, whatnot, you know, tap water even. It's beautiful stuff. Okay, we got just a few minutes left here. So if you could envision a state of hemp, a state of cannabis across maybe the Midwest, we won't say the whole United States, maybe the whole United States, where do we need to move? Like what are the big policy things that should change, or like how do we need to make this a part of our farm?
Yeah. So first of all, going back to the plant being the plant and all of it being cannabis sativa, I think we have the ability to differentiate how much THC is in the plant. So I think at the farm level, we need to just treat it like a plant, whether you're growing it for high cannabinoid or you're growing it for fiber or grain. They're very, very different. It's not complicated that you're going to confuse the end use. And then the end use can be what is tested and regulated for high THC. But I don't think it's fair for fiber hemp to be treated like drug type cannabis, mm-hmm. just like a carrot should not be tested for THC if like you don't expect there to be much in it. So I'd like there to be, I think, a more uniform regulatory policy that's not causing this kind of interstate competition, but the kind of the rules are the same for everybody. But I also think that the plant's end use is what is important for the regulation to be on. With that said, so I see hemp as part of a puzzle for increasing the number of plants that we rely on as a society. It offers these really interesting traits that it has these long fibers. It has a really great nutritional profile. It has interesting cannabinoids, which a lot of medicinal research needs to be further conducted on to better understand how it can be used as a medicine. And so the regulation is hampering all that, but it's a piece of the puzzle. It's a tool in the tool shed that I think we need to embrace. As I said, it grows well here. I'd like to see it gain an acreage in Wisconsin. Now, the one thing that I would like is other crops are grown in certain parts of the country based on where they grow well and where the infrastructure and processing is. So Wisconsin has to figure out what they want to use hemp for. Mm-hmm. You can't use hemp for everything because it won't be possible to process it into all of that.
Right.
So we need to figure out, you know, we have existing industries. We have things like we have a lot of paper mills. So like, can we use that fiber in paper processing?
It would smell much better than the paper mills, I bet you. Hopefully. That's amazing. So it sounds to me like we want to make sure that remove those barriers, use it as the plant that it's meant to be, and maybe move away from some of the old stigmas and just represent. It's both industry, it's medicine, it's a lot of different stuff to a lot of different people. And I'm excited that you're leading the charge on this. So it's time for our show to end. And I've been in the studio with Dr. Shelby Ellison. She represents the UW Cannabis Lab here in Madison, Wisconsin. Shelby, thank you for joining me.
It's a pleasure.
All right. You've been listening to our collective-based science news show, The Perpetual Notion Machine. We're going to sign off with Ben Harper and The Innocent Criminals. Have a great night. To me.